name is Philip McMahon. My company is called This Is Pop Baby. We are a theatre and events company.
My name is Ray Scannell. I'm a playwright and musician.
My introduction to theatre, I suppose, was as a teenager. I became involved in Dublin Youth Theatre when I was about 15 or 16. And from there, I went on to work with National Youth Theatre, which happened at the Abbey in 1996. And I suppose both of those organisations instilled in me a passion for theatre. And for about the first 8 years of my career, I worked as an actor. And out of a frustration of not getting parts, you know, not getting to play that star role that I was born to play, I wrote this play called Danny and Chantel Still Here, which was a vehicle, I suppose, for myself as an actor and my friend Georgina, for us both to become huge stars. Now, out of that, she became a huge star. People were like, oh my God, she's such a good actor. And for me, they went, oh, that was a good play. I suppose that what I realised then was that I had this other skill that I could use. Playwriting then, for me, became my kind of my number one interest.
I started out in Cork during my college years. I got involved in the Dramat, which was the Dramatic Society.
Danny and Chantel, which is my first play, it's a really simple play. It's a really simple story, and it had been inspired by Marco Rose, Howie the Rookie, and Enda Walsh's Disco Pigs. And for me, it was those plays were the first time for me as a teenager where I saw a wild and unpatronising view of working class people. You know, I'm from Finglas in Dublin myself, and I suppose it was the first time that I'd seen these kind of extreme characters that I knew from my own area kind of represented on stage. You know, Disco Pigs is in Cork, but it's the same sort of vibe. And so this was really inspiring to me, and I thought, well, I can really dig into that material. I can choose source material from my own life and my own experience. And so Danny and Chantel is a story about two friends, a guy and a girl, who live in the Ballymun flats, and it's the day that the first Ballymun tower is being torn down. They escape Ballymun. They go into town on this kind of drink and drug fueled night of mayhem across the city, and I suppose, like the flats coming down, you get the feeling that these two young people are on the cusp of something. Perhaps after this night they won't be friends, they're growing up. It's kind of a coming of age story told through the eyes of vodka and ecstasy.
The first time I met Philly actually was through an ex-girlfriend from Dublin who was living in Cork, and Philly was down in Cork for a night, I think. My girlfriend was kind of part of a group of people who had run nightclubs or pubs around town. So I was bound to bump into Philly at some stage. And then I met Philly again. John Fairley, who runs the Stuart Parker Trust, he runs the scheme of bringing people over to the Romanian Theatre Festival. And Philly and myself were there that same year. And then it was Jenny from This Is Pop Baby who I met at the Next Stage, which is a theatre festival run scheme with Theatre Forum. Jenny had never heard anything I'd written music-wise. She just knew that I did write music. So she kind of had a hunch, she said. So she came over to... I was living in London at the time, and she came over with Philly. And I was making lunch at the time for them and probably taking a bit too much time. And Jenny, kind of as gung-ho and efficient as she is, she kind of saw that things needed to push on. So she took over to making the lunch, and she just said, go over in there and play with Philly. So I sat down at the piano, and Philly had his diary out with just some loose ideas, like this town is full of clowns, and some lyrics and stuff like that. I think it was like even four lines. He just kind of threw them at me, and I just tried something out. And the rest is history, as they say.
Alice in Wonderland is a modern retelling of the Alice books. We use those kind of as a lens to talk about what it is to be a young person living in Ireland today. I think we were especially interested in the anxieties, I suppose, of the young person. So Alice, of course, throughout the books, has all these anxieties, and so that kind of transposed really well. And we had imagined it, first of all, as a kind of a Dublin parable for our times, I suppose. Can we transpose this thing to Dublin? Can we make it really contemporary? And experiment for ourselves was, can we write songs, which we hadn't done before? And an interesting thing that happened very quickly, starting with Ray's involvement and then ending up, half of us were from Cork and half were from Dublin. And so this kind of beautiful, ancient, historical rivalry was fueled. But also the interesting thing that happened was that Sarah Green, who created the role of Alice and played Alice, was from Cork, and so the play actually technically is set in Cork, and in her dream space she comes to Dublin, of course, like anybody would in their dreams. So we kind of had this great...
It's only the Dublin people who ever talked about the rivalry, by the way. The Cork people just know there was no competition. It was just, you know, we just let them at it, kind of let them have their little joke.
And on the very first day of devising, because we started with actors, you know, Sarah Green, Susanna Derrickson, Ian Lloyd Anderson, Yasmin Akram, Tony Flynn. On that first morning when we were working in one of the Abbey's rehearsal rooms, and we're sitting in Jenny's kitchen going, how are we going to start this thing? Like, what are we actually going to do? Like, we don't. And so we were like, okay, we'll pick a classic musical number. Ray will teach it to them. And then it will have started. So we chose from The Little Shop of Horrors, we chose the opening sequence from that, Skid Row. And so we went in and everybody's nervous, they're actors, they're, you know, apart from Susanna Derrickson, nobody would really call themselves a singer. And everyone just gave a bash at it. And I think by mid-morning, like, the magic was in the air.
And that was, as Philly said, it was, we were definitely coming at from a beginner's mind, which is a huge advantage, because we had no rules really, and we kind of were making up our own as we went along, and then figuring out what the rules were, and then trying to break them a bit and what have you, but trying to bring this kind of clubbing and electronic influence into the musical.
It starts at seeing Panty the drag queen perform when I was 17 on the stage at the Redbox nightclub in a nightclub called Powder Bubble, which was run by this collective of amazing people, Niall Sweeney, who became this huge avant-garde graphic designer. And to me, that had a profound effect as a young person, of saying that that was theatre. There you go.
For us in Cork, it was Greg and Shane, so they're Fish Go Deep now, Stevie G. And they would have brought over international names like DJ Deep and Carol Cox and Lauren Garnier. And in terms of hip-hop, that just all exploded in Cork. And so this kind of disco influence in hip-hop, and it was all a mesh. And it definitely informed the musical.
Those kind of ideas of nightclubbing, performance, of people that were committing themselves, I suppose. Their lives were about performance. So there wasn't a place where the character stopped and the performance started. Yes, you go downtown, where the cabs don't stop. Downtown, where the food is slap. Downtown, where the hopheads flop in the snow. When I think of queer theatre, I suppose I suppose the word queer itself is so much more charged and kind of visceral and urgent. For us, in the work that we've done throughout the years, which we'd happy to put under a queer umbrella, I guess the politics of it is so different. And because we were never working through what we would consider to be a straight politics, but rather we were working through a queer aesthetic. And we kind of used the lens of queer to kind of look at outsiders in the world. And so even today with the festival that we have run called Queer Notions, when we look at people like Peggy Shaw and Johnny Woo and these amazing kind of queer icons that have placed themselves on the outside of society where queers have always existed, and they're like creating parties on the outside, that's really interesting to us. And I suppose Alice in Funderland became this kind of culmination of all those ideas. And of course, the Abbey, you could argue, is the most mainstream platform that you could have in theatre, in a way. And of course, it is wonderfully subversive to have this kind of technically queer piece there. However, it was welcomed there, and it was welcomed not only by the theatre, but it was welcomed by groups of 70-year-olds who always go to the Abbey and who would stand in the foyer afterwards and, you know, say, oh, to be young again, if that's what it is to be young, well then, you know, I'd gladly do it again. And so there's kind of those joyous moments. And so there's the meeting where the mainstream and the kind of queer underground meet. It doesn't always clash, you know what I mean? After a particular matinee of Alice in Funderland at the Abbey, it kind of gives you a sense of the new audience that it brought. Whether they'll be back, I don't know. There was a guy in the front row who was obviously having a great time, and after the audience cleared, there were six empty cans of Dutch Gold under the seat in the front row. So somebody had come, you know, they bought a ticket for the matinee, they'd stocked up, and they'd gone in and they'd had a great time.